You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Pick My Brain is the podcast where founders pitch me their startup and I try to give them some useful advice so they can connect better with potential co-founders, investors, media, and of course, customers. My name's Alan Jones and I was a founder myself for about 15 years, and after that an angel investor for another 15 years, so yeah, old. Some of my ventures have been successful and some failed disastrously, but I like to think I've learned a thing or two along the way, and maybe some of that can help you. So if you'd like to learn how to tweak your pitch, subscribe to the Pick My Brain show now, wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
Hi, it's Chris Titley here. As part of the FinTech Fun podcast series, I'm joined by Sam Thompson from Savoir. Sam, thanks so much for being part of this series.
Thanks for having us here, Chris.
Mate, Savoir, not a name that's overly familiar with in the FinTech ecosystem here in Australia, but I'd love to learn a little bit more about what you guys do and how it all began.
Yeah, sure thing. So Savoir, I'll go quickly into the name. We were trying to think of something quite catchy that would help people sort of think about how to utilize our application or what it is we're trying to develop. And the team at the moment is comprised by a bunch of professionals who each have around 20 years experience across business and finance, banking sort of space. And we've identified an opportunity where we think we can add and help a lot out to businesses. And so we were trying to think of an idea of, okay, we want people to go and log into a piece of software, just the same as SAP or Oracle in the same way they do today. And we're trying to find something catchy. And in the English language, that was a little bit tricky. Savoir actually means to know in French.
Yep,
and so if you want to know something, you log into Savoir.
That's it. There you go. So you came up with a name, and then you needed to come up with the opportunity.
Sure. So it's... For myself, I guess I'll start there. So last year, I started to really take a more active interest into the blockchain and crypto space. And I was working in the banking sector at the time. And from what I could see in there, there was a range of opportunities around getting access to funds in an easy sort of way that wasn't limited by the current system out there at the moment, at a competitive rate, and that, you know, wouldn't sort of drive people to jump through too many hoops in that. And through my experience and troubles in trying to work with the banks and so on, and also working with one at the same point in time, I started to play around with the DeFi space a little bit. Now, more recently, there's been a few bumps in that sort of area, but there are a lot of opportunities at the same point. And from that, I think, you know, I sat down with one of my old colleagues, Dev Jagaran, who's our chief operating officer. The two of us worked in the ERP about 5 years ago quite closely, and we were always limited by what we could do with the software there at the time. And so kind of combining those two elements of programmable money plus the ERP, which drives, you know, how companies should be utilizing those funds, or, you know, paying staff, suppliers, you know, tracking customer payments and all the rest as well, we started to really sort of understand that there was a unique opportunity to try and build a bridge between those two industries. And that's effectively what we're trying to do there with Savoir at the moment. We're kicking off around the treasury module, which really goes to the heart of what, you know, holding those funds in that for companies, and then expanding that into the supply chain module and then HR down the track and so on as well. So we want to try and over the next couple of years start to tie these elements together, and utilizing that blockchain technology again, we can really drive a lot more process efficiency that we just haven't been able to do in the past as well, utilizing some of the smart contracts and other pieces at the same time.
When people think of blockchain, broadly speaking, they think of the application use and how that could actually play out over the next couple of years in a very efficient way and in a game-changing way. And you've seen things like the ASX look to change their chess program to be on the blockchain, and you've seen other large companies sort of start thinking about application use. Why do you think it's been a little slow per se, and what, you know, on that front, why are you excited about what you're doing?
Companies struggle to understand how to use it effectively. And it's funny you actually mentioned that, Chris, around the ASX. The CIO of the ASX is actually one of our advisors at Savoir. So he's been a great sort of person to sort of discuss the opportunity we're looking at the moment and try and, you know, get the best out of it. I think that's where our team are really quite well positioned. Like, we've been on the front lines trying to look at technology and understand how to adapt it to business to try and drive some of these benefits that, you know, people sort of tout around the place. And I guess taking a lot of those lessons that we've learned through our experience the past 20 years, we can start to sort of generate that into an application, which makes that transitional journey a little bit easier for companies. You know, whether that be sort of looking at cash flow forecasts as part of our treasury component, looking at where that surplus cash may be available to them to go and deploy somewhere more effectively. The barriers such as moving it into a bank account, which takes days, you want to go push it overseas around the US dollars, such as what we're looking at today, that can take half a week at the moment. Mm. We're trying to traverse all those things and do it almost instantaneously in a way that's liquid for companies to be able to sort of deposit and withdraw with relative speed and ease. And that sort of opens them up to high deposit rates and so on at the same point, which if you log on to any bank today to look at what a company deposit rate is, most of them would be still under 1% in US dollars now, which is our first target area. And that's quite unique given that, you know, we've actively seen in the news at the moment that the US government's been raising their interest rates. Those savings are not being passed on to customers, or not savings, I should say, but the benefits not being passed on to customers. So we are looking to try and tap into that and help companies realize some of that.
And then from your vision, you'll need people that are championing what you're doing and really kind of the buy-in, so to speak. I mean, how hard has that been? And I suppose the barriers of like, okay, well, we want to do this. This is the goal. How do we get there? And who do we need as counterparties?
Yeah, so I think it's about trying to partner with a few good examples that people can relate to and understand. That's really, you know, because again, it's fear of the unknown. There's a lot of stigma out there in the marketplace at the moment. We certainly saw that at the start of the year and much more over the last couple of weeks. And so it's trying to lower the fear around that at the moment in a meaningful way. The other key important part about what WIRE's trying to do is we are developing the technology on blockchain. And at the moment, we're seeing a lot of bad actors out there looking at some of the cryptocurrencies and so on. One of the key things that we want people to remember and understand, though, is that CBDCs, which are government-issued tokens, will be coming into the marketplace in the next couple of years in a very, very active way. Our technology has been built so that it can take on board those government-issued tokens as well. So, again, back to that sort of point around programmable money, that's part of what we're trying to really drive at here and help companies sort of adopt the new, instruments that are being released by governments as well. So, again, just lowering that barrier and helping people make that transition in a way that they can understand.
And then when they do understand, and you've obviously in your business, you know, understand the tangible benefits, I mean, why are you excited about the blockchain and why should companies be excited?
I think it's because we haven't been able to do this in the past. You know, again, if you're a company today out there trading in US dollars, and that's quite common in Australia, like we have a lot of our resource-based industry, be that agriculture or minerals for that matter, you know, they're all buying and selling in US dollars. Deposit rates again around the country, next to nothing.
Yep.
If we can go and help a company earn 3 or 4%, and that's sitting on a $10 million balance, you know, as we sort of scale and grow our business in time, that's a sizable difference to their bottom line, you know, and we're not talking about big, huge business. That could be a medium enterprise, you know, a farmer as such. You know, that's really going to help them benefit. And it also helps us sort of with what we're trying to achieve. But at the end of the day, the bank's going to get squeezed here. And so we want to be part of that story and journey. That's the treasury side of things. With the supply chain, the ability to track the movement of a product, I guess, all the way through. There are copious amounts of staff and people at the moment that sit in organizations doing manual data entry around this sort of process. The smart contract can help sort of alleviate a lot of that. And we have seen some examples recently where there have been application of technology of blockchain. What we're trying to do at Savoir is merge a lot of that together, the supply chain and the treasury side, so we can do end-to-end process in one hit, rather than sort of, again, have this segmented or siloed approach to the way things have been done at the moment. So it's a bit more evolutionary in that sort of respect.
And then when it comes to partnerships or looking at areas of expertise that you may not be as competent in, how are you thinking about that when it comes to organisations that might already be ahead of the curve and already use some existing suppliers or some application use potentially in agriculture?
Yeah, look, we are, I don't want to sort of name names at the moment, but we are talking to a few different industry experts now, I guess you could say. So we recognize that we don't know everything out there, and where we do need to sort of leverage on that knowledge to your point, we are talking to, say, accounting firms or other sort of interesting technology players which are helping sort of solve some problems in the blockchain space. You know, I think it's about sort of developing those partnerships so that we can come to the market with a more confident sort of outcome and show that we have that breadth of experience, again, to help sort of companies understand and traverse those challenges at the moment. So perhaps a little bit young to be able to sort of talk to some of those at the moment, Chris, but yep. certainly in the next 6 months, we're quite excited.
Yeah, and on that, in the next 6 months, in terms of the feedback that you get and how you're building out what you think is also going to be scalable, but also at the same time taking that feedback from some potential beta customers to then tweaking it, have you got to that stage yet, and how are you sort of thinking about that?
We've started to talk to a few businesses already about taking on board our prototype that we're developing. So we're only a couple of months away from getting our first MVP to a point where we think we can start to work with a couple of businesses to sort of get them to trial and test it for us. Our ultimate goal by around the second quarter next year is to have this product into a state that we can look to deploy into the Xero store. From that, we can start to work with sort of SMEs and take on sort of that broader based feedback around our product and how it's operating at that point in time. From there, you know, the goal for Sedwire is still to develop up to that enterprise sort of level and space. But we realize that we want to walk before we run.
No, absolutely. And that Xero market per se would be your key market where, you know, they potentially cap out at a particular size of a business too. Starting from people like myself that use the product as a one-man band, but then up to 30 to 40, 50, 100, et cetera, headcount. You know, in terms of verticals, I mean, you mentioned agriculture and you mentioned mining. They're probably two obvious ones, but, you know, broadly speaking, agnostically, it could be anything.
It could be. The reason we're targeting that first is, I guess, in the blockchain space, we've really only seen the stable coins, which for those who don't know about it, is an instrument which is pegged to the US dollar at the moment, or to a particular currency, I should say. And so we've only really seen the US dollars sort of play at the moment. Euros are starting to come into the scene, but in the next 12 to 24 months, we'll start seeing many other currencies, hopefully the Australian dollar for that point. So for now, we're a little bit limited by who we can approach with our model until we start to see that sort of broaden in the ecosystem. And that's why, I guess, we're sort of looking at those two areas. But, you know, there are other examples such as aviation and finance and so on as well, who trade in the dollars, or US dollars, I should say. But, yeah, again, looking for that sort of expansion in the future.
On the supply chain, I've come across companies that sort of track food, potentially track things like rare diamonds and things and wine. I've heard a bit of that, but I mean, I suppose from a counterfeit point of view and the opportunity for businesses to really control their supply chain, it must be a thrilling kind of concept to understand that you can actually track and authenticate.
Yeah, most definitely. And I guess we started to get the idea. I mean, I saw it through a friend of mine who was trying to sell a rather expensive product on, I think it was Facebook Marketplace. And they weren't able to convince the person who was buying that product that it was a real McCoy, so to speak. You know, they've gone out and spent thousands of dollars on this fashion item, and they didn't believe it. And so it got me thinking a little bit around the technologies that are out there around the blockchain space. And if we were to apply, and part of what the Sedwire product offering is to embed an NFT within that product. And then that gives that product a unique identity. You can be verified online by anybody who can access the site and prove that, yep, it's the real thing, because, you know, it's part of the non-fungible token technology piece, I guess. That then sort of ties into your point there, Chris, around the supply chain side of it. And if we can uniquely identify that particular item, we can track that all the way from manufacturing the factory to the truck to the warehouse to the retail store. And that can be automatically scanned, if, again, tied together with something like an RFID technology, which is being widely adopted in the retail space at the moment. So, again, you know, that's sort of without any touch or manual human intervention, we can start to really drive some of those amazing process efficiencies within businesses. And that's, I guess, you know, some of the exciting points you mentioned there.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And Sam, we've talked a little bit about the business, and let's talk a little bit about yourself. And when you're not talking about blockchain and you're sitting down and having a cup of coffee, if you drink coffee, and what do you think about, and what's your hobby that not many people know about?
I think some of the things that keep me buzzing, Chris, I like to travel. I like to get out there and discover the world and see what's out to be offered. Investing is another thing that I take quite a shining to, and I guess that's how I got into the blockchain and crypto space to a lesser degree. But I guess shares and property and so on as well are things that sort of pique my interest. I enjoy doing that, and hopefully that'll see me through to my retirement and such.
Yeah. No, in terms of travel, have you got a favorite destination if you had one last shot at going somewhere?
Oh, That's a really, really tough question. I've got my eyes set on the Mediterranean or South America at the moment.
Mediterranean or South America. I reckon for myself it would be sort of like a three-way tie between like somewhere in France and somewhere in Italy, and then probably New York. I love New York. I haven't been back for many years now. But and then on the shares and investing side, have you got are you a bit of a blue chip man, or do you like a little bit of speculation, a little bit of risky stuff?
Look, I think on our recent trip that we had over there to San Francisco, there's definitely one player out there that's actually very, very close to the Australian economy and ecosystem as well. I think the company Block are doing some pretty amazing things out there. We can see that in the crypto space and how they are really merging, I guess, traditional finance to what they're able to leverage through the likes of Bitcoin and that as well. Tying that together with you know, their recent purchase of the Afterpay company here in Australia, some of their product offerings that we'll see come to market, and again, you know, linking the Square register with the I guess Afterpay sort of ecosystem, yep. Cash App, we're still going to see deployed into Australia. That company, in my view, will sort of grow tenfold in the next 5 to 10 years.
There you go. And did you manage to visit Square when you were there, or at least go and take some photos of the outside?
We were able to chat to a few people who are participating at the conference there with us, which was fascinating. Yeah, nice. And really good to sort of see some of the insights they're doing. But just again on the ground there, I mean, I was shopping one of the malls over there, Chris, and went to purchase some shoes and realized that you know, they took Afterpay, and I thought that's quite unique. I'm in Silicon Valley and they're taking a good Australian product. And I asked the woman there at the counter, you know, as to how much people use the Afterpay product, and her answer just blew me away and just reinforced my view that I told you about a moment ago. She was actually saying that 75% of the people that come to her store don't even carry wallets and all use Afterpay. So that's, I think, a bit of a testament to the fact of how successful the product's been.
No, I actually did a poll on LinkedIn the other day about who carries wallets anymore, and it was kind of interesting. I think I got about 60% said they still do because of things like ID and maybe a Medicare card or something like that. I think New South Wales and a few states are digitising those things as well. Yeah, the younger generation, it feels like it's the wallet's a disappearing thing when you go out or go for a walk or go out to your party or something like that.
I think it's just us older ones, Chris, who's still carrying around.
That's right. It's almost like the tie, mate. I used to wear a tie, and I think not many people wear ties anymore. So.
Definitely not in Queensland.
Yeah, not in Queensland, this humidity anyway. Sam, mate, thanks for the chat today. Really appreciate the background on Savoir and how you guys are positioning yourself in terms of the blockchain application use and the modules that you mentioned in terms of the growth ahead and the ability to kind of assist companies and improve companies' efficiencies from a tangible point of view, from a large tangible point of view in regards to money. Really look forward to catching up in the progress and catching up for a beer at some point in time.
Sounds great. Really appreciate being here, Chris.
Listen to the Unfunded podcast brought to you by the Day One Network and hosted by me, tech writer Joan Westenberg. We're sharing the no-holds-barred, untold stories from entrepreneurs who have decided to build a business on their terms. I'll be interviewing successful founders and operators on the grit and ingenuity it takes to build and scale independent startups without the support of traditional venture capital funding. Subscribe to the Unfunded podcast now, wherever you get your podcasts.